Welcome to That's Orgasmic, a podcast discussing the orgasmic and not so orgasmic moments of all things sex, relationships, and mental health. I am your host, Emily Duncan, and I'm a sexologist who provides online sex coaching sessions to help you cultivate sexual wellness. This podcast is being recorded on Wadawurrung land. We pay our respect to the traditional custodians of this country and elders past and present. We extend that respect to any First Nations, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people joining us today. Please enjoy this episode. Welcome back to That's Orgasmic. Today's episode is part one of a two-part episode series with Oliver Morden Evans. In today's episode, we talk about Oliver's experience with cerebral palsy and sex and dating and what that was like within Australia. And Oliver also gives pieces of advice for those living with a disability in how they can potentially access dating more or sexuality information education, as well as how to access being sexual. So I hope you enjoy part one of this two-part series. In the next episode, we talk all about sexual expression. So if you don't know what that is, or you want to be able to create your sexual expression, make sure you go listen to that one too. Today, I'm joined with Oliver Morden Evans. Oliver is a sexuality and disability advocate and educator who is currently studying to become a certified sex coach for men with disabilities. So we're here to talk about disability and sex, which I'm super excited about. So welcome to That's Orgasmic.
Thank you for having me.
So to begin with, are you able to tell the listeners a bit about yourself and your disability to set the scene?
Sure. So I am 45. I live in Sydney and I have a quadriplegic spastic cerebral palsy. Which means I have a cerebral palsy that affects all of my limbs. And for that reason, I use a motorized wheelchair as my main mobility aid to get around.
Mm-hmm. And this is a really big question, but what was your experience growing up in Australia with a disability and your sexuality?
That really is a very massive question. Definitely, I grew up in the 90s and the 2000s. So, back then, sex, even without the intersectionality of disability, was something that definitely wasn't talked about as much, even as now. So, really, I received very little sex education at school. I went to an all-boys school, and we can talk about that later in terms of my views around single-sex schooling. Yeah. But, going to a boys' school, I didn't receive anywhere near as much sex education as I think should be present in school. And for that reason, it was really only until I went to university, when I left school, that I was able to engage with women. I identify as straight, so it was really not until I went to university where I was able to connect frequently with people of the opposite sex. And therefore, really, that was a little bit like being put on Mars. And really, I had to learn by myself, basically, how to interact there and to be able to freely express my sexuality, and that was quite difficult, let alone a lot of the stigmas that I really was faced growing up around sexuality. I think back at then, the main misconception, I guess, around someone with a disability was that someone with a severe disability like mine is not sexual at all, and is not really a sexual being, and does not desire or am even capable of having sexual relationships. So that was quite hard for me to reconcile through the fact that I knew that that wasn't the case for me. So I really had to fight that one, and I really had to do what I could to have my needs met in that way, particularly in an environment where it was felt that, because disability, particularly back then, wasn't as seen as much as it is now. Unfortunately, disability was seen as, how do I say this, just undesirable in terms of forming sexual relationships. So that was quite hard to navigate. And to be honest, created a lot of adolescent depression, I guess, for me. So I had to formulate strategies that worked for me in terms of how I could still have my needs met in that way, and not feel like I was taking on a lot of what society was telling me about myself. And trying to do my best to educate people around it. I think at one stage, dating was very difficult, and dating was basically non-existent for me in my 20s. I think it's a whole other story, but trying to date on in the early days of online dating and Tinder and things, I think a lot of able-bodied people thought that that was an awesome thing for me because it made dating more accessible. However, I think in a lot of ways it made it harder because, the swiping, the swiping really takes people at face value, and really doesn't look for deeper connection. So that made it even more difficult. So I think, just to sum up your question, the long way around was it was very difficult. And it was really not until my 30s that I was able to do the self-development and personal development work that I realized that I needed to do and really let go of a lot of that internalized ableism that I had within me, basically because society would put on all these, misconceptions of me that I started to possibly start believe myself, that I had to change my thinking around that.
Yeah, and there's so many things that I'd love to unpack there. I guess to begin, I guess kind of coming from where you were first talking about where not being seen as sexual. And I see that in my work as a disability support worker all the time. For anyone listening, it's called like infantilism. And the amount, nearly every client that's of age where they're like, I've got, how do I word this? All of my clients that are like adults basically have brought up the fact, because all of them are still living at home with their parents, then they've all brought up the fact that their parents don't want them either watching movies with sex scenes, hanging out with friends or people that they've been dating. I've heard stories of them stopping people that they're dating. And it's just, there's all of these roadblocks because people are saying, no, you're not allowed to be sexual. No, we don't, we're not, you know, whether they're not okay with it or we can't see you as sexual. And it's devastating. And I see the impact it has firsthand. And like, it's so hard to navigate, especially as a support worker, because it's like, I want to be able to help you. But it is really hard when we still have your parents here who are kind of dictating everything. So I really empathize with anybody who is in that situation because I can't even imagine what that would be like to navigate. And then also, I guess what I'm really interested in with what you said was you've come into your 30s, you've done some self-development. Is this like when you started going on dates, like started being sexual, like what did that look like for you? Because I imagine there's probably a few people listening who live with a disability and they want to do this self-development or start dating. I guess, do you have any tips on how to do that or sharing some of your experience?
Yeah, for sure. So first of all, I like to preface anything I say with the fact that I have a purely physical disability, cerebral palsy, so with only a physical component to my disability. So anything I say, I really can only speak from my own experience, and I don't like to, you know, obviously talk for any other disabilities because that's not my experience. So just having said that, I can just tell you a little bit about how I formed new sort of social connections and really forced myself into attending more sex positive spaces, to be honest, spaces that weren't really even designed, or they didn't even see people with disability there. So I would often rock up to events and I would be like the first person they would ever see in a wheelchair. So it was quite eye-opening for a lot of people, and really it I faced a lot of like rejection, to be honest, in the early days, because people just didn't know how to interact with me. And I think the fact that my disability is only physical, when unfortunately a lot of cerebral palsy comes with an intellectual component to the disability, makes it hard as well, because it really takes time for people to see, okay, this guy doesn't have an intellectual disability. We can interact with him in exactly the same way as anyone else. So I basically, I'll just tell you, so I was looking for new sort of spaces to hang out in, new social activities to do. And I came across a meetup event on, you know, that platform Meetup. It was very vague about what it was, but it was talking about, you know, do you want to learn how to be more confident with women, and do you want to meet women? And I was like, I have no idea what this is, but I will, you know, give it a go and see what it's about. Anyway, fast forward, I went to this event and turned out to be a taster event for a learning a practice called orgasming meditation. And I don't know if you know much about that, but unfortunately it has quite bad raps now after a Netflix documentary. But the practice in itself is very powerful and very potent. So I learned all about that practice, and you know, I can go into what that practice is later. But it's a sexuality practice, which is basically a mix of, I don't know, like meditation and tantra and a few different elements of, it's a partnered meditation practice. Anyway, so that was like my gateway into like more sex positive spaces, and that kind of got me into learning things about tantra and about kink, conscious kink, and all kinds of different you know, workshops and events that I would start going to, you know, play parties and you know, just everything in the sex positive space. So that was basically how I did it. I just jumped in and forced myself to go to these events, which, you know, like as I said, I get around in a wheelchair. Often these spaces weren't even wheelchair accessible, so I would basically just have to rock up and ask people to, you know, help me up the stairs and, you know, do what I could to try and help them by bringing ramps or whatever. But I unfortunately had to take the lead on that because, as I said, like these spaces weren't equipped at all for, you know, disability, particularly physical disability. So, yeah, fast forward now, which is like 8-9 years later, I'm starting to see, you know, the real need for making these spaces a lot more accessible for people with disabilities of all types. Because there's really, to be honest, nothing much changed in the last 8 or 9 years, unfortunately. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, which is sad, especially because this probably feels like a time where we're starting. It's kind of like 2 steps forward, 1 step back, I feel like, in this space, in a lot of spaces, especially when it comes to sexuality. But, yeah, it's great to hear your journey in starting to, like, you know, explore these things and just going and trying things. I think that's a really, what's the word? Probably a courageous thing to do, because I think it's quite scary. Even like for me, sometimes going to a new event, especially if you're by yourself and you're like, I don't even know what this is going to be. And then obviously, if you add layers of, am I going to be able to access this? Will I be accepted here? It's just going to add to it. But I think it's great hearing your story for anyone listening that maybe, you know, is wanting to try these things, to do that, have that push, and to go try that and see where it takes them.
Yeah, I've always innately known about the importance of sexuality in any person's, you know, makeup and person's, you know, happiness in life, and really I knew for a long time that that was really important to me. So the importance of that, I think, really pushed me to make to push my edges and to push my confidence, I guess, in that area. It was definitely not easy, but and to be honest, I really can just say that I did it myself. I mean, I know often things are easier in a community and to have people alongside you pushing for more equal opportunity there. But I feel like I did a lot of it myself.
Yeah. And living with your disability, how were you able to access being sexual, whether that's like masturbation, being sexual with others? Like, how did you find that experience?
Like for most people, like my sexuality, my sex life is complex and is solo and partner and play. So I'm very lucky in that I do have the physical ability to masturbate. So I can do that, which is I'm very grateful for, because many people can't. And I know, you know, the I guess the hardship when that's not available to you, because accessing sex with partners is a lot more difficult when you do have a disability, particularly, you know, a severe disability like being bound in a wheelchair. So luckily I do have that option. That's available to me. I also, even to this day, I still try out the dating app scene. However, dating apps don't really work for me, and I can probably have a whole podcast for that subject. Dating apps are very fickle, I think erotically marginalized identities such as disability don't get much attention on dating apps, so that's always been difficult. For me, I've had to find novel ways, to be honest, of finding partners to be sexual with. I feel comfortable to say that I have relied on sex workers, and I think, you know, the sex work industry is something that's vitally important. And I think for people with disabilities that where nothing else is available to them, I think that's a wonderful option for that. And I've used sex workers before, and I think that's great. But also, I have sort of dabbled in other sort of like non-traditional forms of relationships, such as sugar dating, for the last 5 or 6 years. And that has been quite successful for me as well. And it's a funny one. I think there's a whole host of reasons why that has worked for me when other dating hasn't. I can probably go off on a tangent here, but when you're a man, a cis man with a disability, often your masculinity is seen as less than because you rely on people for help and you know, it often challenges people's perception of what it means to be masculine. And sugar dating as a provider helps to really create that sort of masculine feminine polarity. So that I think is one of the reasons why that has worked for me. Obviously not available to everyone, but I think there's a lot of questioning to be done around, you know, how we perceive masculinity in disabled bodies.
Yeah, and that's really interesting. Like, being completely honest, I hadn't even thought of sugar dating as, like, I guess one of the options, and you make such a valid point of how it can create that masculine-feminine polarity. And obviously as a sexologist, you know, I've heard about, sex workers and different sexual aids, certain sex toys that can be set up, or having a occupational therapist help, you know, create a space for you to be able to do that, or support workers that are facilitated, able to facilitate, like, let's say if you don't have the ability to put a condom on, there's certain people out there that are able to do that. But that's one thing, sugar dating, that actually I didn't know. So thank you for sharing that, because I think, you know, I obviously wasn't aware, so I think a lot of people will learn from that.
Yeah, because I mean, in terms of the practicalities of sex, I'm quite lucky in that I live independently, I live alone, and I am very verbal, obviously. So I can help, you know, help people, sexual partners, you know, help move my body, etc. So I haven't really needed to involve like other people or even in terms of sex toys. You know, like I do know of some great sex toys that have been designed for people with disabilities. I don't use any particularly for people with disabilities, but I do know of a lot, and I think I might have included some in your show notes.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely one out there called Bumpin', which you probably know is from Andrew Gerza, who is a sex advocate in Canada, and he does some great work around, you know, sexuality and disability awareness. And yeah, he's developed his own sex toy. There's plenty of options out there now, which is awesome, because honestly, it wasn't really available when I was growing up.
Yeah, absolutely. And for anyone who doesn't know what the bumping stick is, it's like, I think it's like a meter long, and you can put different sex toys in the handle part. So if you don't have good like hand dexterity, and then you can also like caress it, it's like comfortable. Oliver made a whole heap of resources. So I'll have them in the show notes, because it is so useful, because we probably could have had a whole episode just going through each resource. For those living with a disability who, you know, want support in being physically sexual, do you have any tips or suggestions for about how they could go about this? Obviously, you've just shared, I guess, your experience. Mm-hmm. Do you have, I guess, any tips for somebody who maybe isn't sure on how to go about it?
Well, yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a wonderful organisation based here in Sydney called Touching Base, which, trains sex workers in working with clients with disabilities, and they offer a referral service for people with disabilities who want to find a sex worker that we're both wants to see clients with disabilities and are trained as well. So that is a great resource. I'll pop that in the show notes as well. Beyond that, I think, I think there's other organisations. There's one in Sydney here called Northcott Society, and I know they do quite a bit of work in the sexuality space in terms of counselling and be able to see people one-on-one around how they can be more sexual based on their individual needs and desires. And from a more general perspective, I think I think it's really important to be able to really know what your desires are and to really be able to formulate a plan for putting those desires into reality. We don't have to just be fantasies all the time, I think fantasies are important, but it's also important to be able to realize a lot of your ideas and goals in that way. So I think, being practical about, what they are and finding a solution. I'm always about finding imaginative solutions to problems, as I guess a lot of people with disabilities are. So, that's really no exception. Unfortunately, as I said before, a lot of sex positive spaces are very inaccessible, and therefore, a lot of workshops and play spaces aren't accessible, and therefore, from my point of view, I know for a fact that I'm going to an event actually tomorrow night, and it's at a venue that's not accessible. So I know that I need to take two helpers to carry me up the stairs, because this place isn't accessible. So I always like to think there's a solution to a problem. Obviously, that's not always possible, but I tend to fight fire with fire, in terms of finding a solution. So, kind of sometimes saying no to something is the way to go.
Yeah, and I think what you were talking about just before about finding and identifying your desires, super important, and I think it leads perfectly into what we're going to discuss next, which is finding your sexual expression. And I guess, to be clear, how would you define sexual expression?
So I'm interrupting to stop the episode right there. If you want to hear more about sexual expression, what it is and how to create it, make sure you go listen to the other episode that is already currently live, part 2. If you enjoyed this chat with Oliver, I just wanted to let you know that Oliver is looking for sex coaching clients at the end of this year, 2024. So particularly men living with a disability, for his practicum. So basically he needs for his study to do some sex coaching and get experience. So if this is something you're interested in, please reach out to his Instagram, which is in the show notes, if you want to message him and let him know that's something you're interested in. So I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Just remember, there's a whole heap of resources in the show notes that you can access if you want movie recommendations, books, sex toys. There's a whole heap there. But that's all from me. So as always, please message me, email me with any comments, questions, or stories, either to my email, emilyduncan@thatsorgasmic.com, or my Instagram, That's Orgasmic. Please subscribe or whatever platform you use to listen to this podcast, as it makes all of the difference in helping me keep making this podcast, and leave a review, as I'd love to know what you're thinking. So thank you, Shaggers, and I'll see you next time.